Today on the 21st Show, when you're out shopping and eating, how often are you asked for a tip? At a sit-down restaurant, of course. But what about at a coffee shop or a fast food joint? Maybe even a bookstore or florist? Today we're talking about all aspects of tipping, from a time when it was considered un-American to its growing prominence today. And we want to hear from you. Has tipping gotten out of hand? How much do you give and where? And especially if you've ever worked for tips, what do you think of the system? Join us live at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Tipping is everywhere these days, or at least it often feels that way. We're expected to tip at a sit-down restaurant, but what about a sandwich shop where you get the food at a counter and are expected to bus your own table when you're done? I'm looking at you, Panera. You know, there was a time in American history when tipping was frowned upon. Take this moment from the 1936 film The Petrified Forest, featuring Leslie Howard and Betty Davis.
And thank you, Miss Maple. I shall remember your kindness.
I forgot to give you your change.
But I wanted you to keep that.
Oh, but tipping is un-American. We don't allow it.
Tipping is un-American. We don't allow it. Oh, how far we've come, where everyone from fast food workers to even florists sometimes now solicit the noblesse oblige of their customers. We know you have opinions on this. We heard from several of you on our voicemail line.
This is Cindy from Urbana, and I'm just calling to say that during the pandemic, I started tipping fast food workers at the drive-up window, and I keep doing it. I think it's the right thing to do.
Hi, this is Waylon calling from Champaign, Illinois. I do not tip, and I tell people at the outset that I'm not going to tip them. That is to say, the servers, I tell them at the outset I'm not going to tip them. I do not believe in tipping because I think it's a way for the owners of the businesses to price deceptively, put prices on deceptively.
And we hope to hear from more of you as we go on at 800-222-9455. And indeed, there are those who question how much tipping actually benefits workers. Back in October, the Chicago City Council voted in favor of an ordinance that will, over the next few years, get rid of the city's tipped minimum wage. That is, the lower minimum wage that businesses can pay workers who earn tips. Joining us to talk about all of this is Rachel Wolf. She's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal who focuses on consumer trends, and she's written quite a bit lately on the state of tipping and the mental toll it seems to be taking on us. Rachel, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks so much.
One Fair Wage is the organization that led the push to get rid of Chicago's subminimum wage, and its president is also here for this conversation. Saru Jayaraman is also director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. Saru, welcome to you as well.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And researchers have also tried to make sense of the phenomenon of tipping, the effect it has on businesses, workers, and customers alike. Lawrence Debo has authored multiple studies on tipping. He's a professor of operations management at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. He joins us now. Lawrence, thank you for being here as well.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And once again, listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. How do you feel about tipping? Do you think businesses are maybe overdoing it with the tip jars, real or virtual? Or maybe you've worked for tips and it's been an important part of your income. But does it seem like a fair system? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Lawrence, I want to begin with you with, I guess, what we could call an existential question on this topic, which is, why do people tip?
Oh, hi, Brian. That's indeed an existential question. Why do people tip? lots of research has been done by economists trying to find rational reasons to tip. You know, because tipping is not compulsory. You can just, you know, walk away, you know, without a tip, and nobody is going to arrest you for that. So rational consumers, as traditional economists believe, they shouldn't leave a tip. And yet we see that many consumers do leave a tip. So there has been many theories trying to explain that, but rational consumer behavior is certainly not one of these. What people kind of come to the conclusion is that a social norm is very important, and a norm that develops over a long time. Other people tip, so I do feel guilty if I don't tip. So a social norm is important, but also emotions are important. Emotions, feelings of gratitude when you received a good service, or also feelings of shame when you don't tip or when you stiff somebody. So from a research perspective, tipping is much better studied than behavioral economics, where we mix some type of rational motivations, because after all, tipping is money, and I have to separate myself from my money. So I want a tip huge amount, but also taking the social norm and emotions into account.
Yeah, social norms and emotions. Well, and it's interesting the variety of businesses at which we tip. And Rachel, I want to bring you into the conversation now. We asked members of our texting group how they feel about this. We heard a lot of perspectives. John in Springfield, Illinois, for example, said, "I tip at restaurants where I'm seated and actually served. I sometimes tip for other services where the person has done a great job. I usually don't tip at counter service type restaurants, unless they're super busy or really engaging and make you feel welcome and appreciated." John goes on to say, "I really don't like the suggested tips on many point of sale terminals. I understand they're trying to make it convenient, but it just feels intrusive for some reason. I prefer to tip cash directly to the server." Rachel, I want to come back to the sort of technology side and how that's affected tipping. But traditionally speaking, what are the sorts of businesses where a tip would be expected? What's the etiquette?
Yeah, I think that listener summed it up pretty well, that, you know, in areas where people are receiving a service, where they're seeing somebody going above and beyond for them, or they know that tips are an expected part of their income, you know, going back to the idea of that tip minimum wage, people have been conditioned to it. Where there's a lot of frustration right now is this proliferation of tips, where there didn't used to be an expectation of tipping. So we saw during the pandemic, a lot more businesses, basically anywhere that has a point, one of those point of sale machines where you tap to pay, you know, it was just with the click of a button, they could add the option to tip. And so many businesses decided that it couldn't hurt. Everybody else was doing it, so why shouldn't they? And then, you know, now we're seeing all of this consumer pushback to it, where people are just feeling really overwhelmed. And so what I've noticed is that consumers don't have as much of a problem with tipping servers, though I think increasingly there has been more of a interrogation of whether that's the best policy, and, you know, more people are questioning it. We're seeing what's happening in Chicago. Suru will tell us about, I'm sure, other places where this is coming into question, but I think that the whole idea is definitely facing more pushback from workers, consumers, even a lot of business owners. But really where people are fed up is these places where tipping was not originally expected.
I definitely felt that myself during the pandemic, right? Like I have the privilege of being able to work from home at that time. And, you know, thank you for coming in and risking the virus to make me my burrito bowl or whatever it is. Sure, I might tip a little extra then, but It seems like we're pretty much beyond that now. Yeah, Saru Jayaraman, let me bring you into the conversation now with One Fair Wage and the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. And I do want to come to the questioning that people are doing of the benefits of this practice for workers. But let's stick with this idea of the history of tipping as a practice. I played that sound clip at the beginning of the introduction. There was a time when it was thought of as un-American. How did we get here where we are today?
Yeah, and I actually think I would love through that history to also give my answer as to why we tip, because it has a very historical and intentional and political background. So tipping began in feudal Europe. It was something that aristocrats and nobles gave to serfs and vassals, but always on top of a wage. So serfs and vassals in feudal Europe actually received full wages, salaries even. Tips were extras or bonuses to say job well done. And when the idea first came to the States in the 1850s, when, of course, people started traveling back and forth between Europe and America, it was resoundingly rejected. Americans said, this is a vestige of feudalism. We are democracy. We don't believe in tipping because you should get good service regardless of how much you can afford to tip. And by the way, we think employers should pay their workers, not customers. And that was the feeling until after emancipation, when restaurants began a very intentional campaign of trying to hire newly freed Black people in Illinois, Black people moving up from the South and trying to force them to live exclusively on tips. And there were two industries that did this. One was the Pullman Train Company, headquartered in Chicago, hiring Black men. And the other was restaurants hiring Black women. And of course, 1925, A. Philip Randolph formed the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the first Black union in the United States, to fight for an actual wage, one fair wage with tips on top, rather than relying exclusively on tips. But 1927, just 2 years after Pullman Car Porters formed, the National Restaurant Association formed in Chicago in response to the Pullman Car Porters organizing and fought to ensure the Black women in the restaurant industry never got what the Black men in the porter in the Pullman trains got, and began a very intentional campaign of encouraging tipping, basically as a way to ensure that they would never have to pay these workers' wages, that customers would feel obliged to pay these workers' wages. So it was very intentional, very political. 1937, Pullman car porters won the right to an actual wage with tips on top. 1938, the Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, won the exemption of tipped workers from the Fair Labor Standards Act, the first federal minimum wage that passed in 1938 as part of the New Deal. And so why we tip now in America is not just cultural or guilt. I'm sure that plays into it, but it is very intentional, political, and historical. It is rooted in an intentional campaign by the National Restaurant Association to get customers to feel obliged to pay their workers so they don't feel they don't have to pay them. But it's also rooted in basically telling workers that they're going to get tipped and therefore they shouldn't have to be paid. And sadly, as Rachel mentioned, with the pandemic, we are seeing more and more employers want that exemption that restaurants have had for, frankly, generations, and basically try to emulate it, because sadly there is a federal rule that says that as long as you earn $30 or $40 a month in tips, you can be paid that sub-minimum wage that restaurant workers get in 43 states currently across the country. There are 7 states that got rid of this, by the way, many decades ago. California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska all require a full minimum wage with tips on top and have for decades. But as long as you've got so much of the country allowing a sub-minimum wage, there will be this ongoing intentional push from the Restaurant Association to have customers continue to tip, and an ongoing desire by other employers to emulate that so that they too can get access to that sub-minimum wage.
Interesting. And so, Rachel, when workers are knowing that their income is reliant on tipping. And I should mention, we were going to also have another guest who co-authored a different study looking at working conditions, specifically in bars and food service. Unfortunately, he is ill this morning and could not join us. But Rachel, can you speak to, from your reporting at the Wall Street Journal, how does tipping fit into the bigger picture of everything that food service workers, for example, have to deal with on the job?
Yeah, we're seeing increased tension between consumers and service workers for sure. Especially we're seeing this when inflation was really high. People were so frustrated with the high prices of everything and taking that out on the people who they could see face to face, which was really unfortunate. But consumers are feeling really unhappy with they feel less trust than they once did for companies and small businesses. And so we see them taking that out on those who they're interacting with, which is those people are obviously not the ones who are actually able to set the prices or anything like that. So, it definitely ties in and it's connected as well to more service sector workers quitting at higher rates than they once did because they just feel like it's not worth it, especially with the labor market still pretty strong.
Yes. Yes. Listeners out there, the person who is serving you your Chipotle bowl is not setting the prices at Chipotle. I can assure you of that. We need to take a break coming up here on the show. So let me just remind listeners that if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking about the rise of tipping, how it's reaching beyond the traditional places you'd expect to see at bars and restaurants and taxi cabs, and into places you might not expect to see it. Bookshops is one example we heard about. We're also talking about the effects that tipping has on workers and businesses and what some places, like the city of Chicago, are doing about that. We're talking about all of this with Saru Jayaraman, who's president of the advocacy group One Fair Wage, also director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, Rachel Wolf, a Wall Street Journal reporter who covers issues and consumer trends like this, and Lorenz Debo, who is professor of operations management at Dartmouth College. You can join our conversation today by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What do you think about tipping out there? Are you happy to do it? Are you reluctant about it? Do you think it's gotten out of control? Let us know. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the rise in tipping. It's going beyond places like restaurants, where most of us have lived with it for most of our lives, and into other types of businesses you might not expect. Bookshops is one example we heard about. And we're also talking about the effects this has on workers and businesses and what some places like Chicago are doing about all of this. We're talking about this with Lorenz Debo, who's professor of operations management at Dartmouth, Rachel Wolf, a Wall Street Journal reporter, and Saru Jayaraman, who is president of the group One Fair Wage, and also director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. You can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Sara, before the break, I saw you had your hand raised. Did you want to say more about the idea of the working conditions that people face and how tipping affects that? I mean, I've certainly heard, you hear from women servers who experience sexual harassment seemingly at tip point, if you want to say it that way.
That's right. So from, as I mentioned, post-emancipation times until today, the overwhelming majority of tipped workers in the United States have been women. Over two-thirds of tipped workers in Illinois and across the country are women, and they're overwhelmingly women working in very casual restaurants and bars, struggling with, per government data, two times the poverty rate of other workers and using food stamps at double the rate of other workers because tips simply do not bring them to a place where they're able to feed their own families without relying on public assistance. Now, as you mentioned, our data shows that the restaurant industry, in particular, tipped workers have the highest rates of sexual harassment of any industry because they have to put up with so much to get those tips from customers, but also because as a result of that, and we've done extensive research on this with Professor Catherine McKinnon, who of course is the legendary law professor who coined the term sexual harassment and fought to make it illegal in front of the Supreme Court. She has said that tipped workers face higher rates of sexual harassment than any industry she studied, including the military, because they are basically asked not just asked to tolerate harassment, but in fact encouraged by management to dress more sexy, show more cleavage, wear tighter clothing in order to make more money in tips, which means that young women, and by the way, this is the first job for 1 in 2 young people in America, young women are encouraged from a very early age to encourage harassment in order to make more money in tips. We also have studied the 7 states that got rid of the subminimum wage for tipped workers and found they have 1/2 the rate of sexual harassment as states with a subminimum wage as low as $2.13 an hour, which is the federal minimum wage for tipped workers, because women in the states that get paid a full minimum wage, look, they get tips. In fact, tipping is often higher in those states than it is in Illinois or other states with a subminimum wage. But women in the 7 states that get a full minimum wage say, I get tips, but I'm not entirely dependent on the tips. So I can tell somebody who tries to harass me, buzz off. I don't need your tips. I can rely on a wage from my boss like everybody else. The data also shows tremendous racial inequities that come from relying on tips, because there's now irrefutable data that Black workers get tipped less as a result of implicit bias from customers, fluctuations every worker experiences, whether a slow shift, a good shift, a Monday night versus a Saturday night. And that results in people having very high levels of economic instability and inability to pay bills and reliance on public assistance. Now, with the pandemic, all of this got so much worse. Workers reported tips went way down because sales went down. Harassment that was already the highest in our industry went way up. So many women told us, I'm regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. And they started walking off job en masse. 1.2 million workers left the industry, which has forced a lot of restaurants to raise wages in order to recruit staff. And it is why we are winning a full minimum wage with tips on top. It's not just having moved in Chicago. We passed it in DC. It is moving in 13 states in January and 25 states over the next 2 years. And it's all because workers have really reached their limit in the restaurant industry, saying, I just cannot put up with this anymore.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Edward is calling from Chatham on line 4. Edward, thank you for calling in.
Yeah. Yeah, on the tips, I tip all the time. The waitresses and waiters, like the lady said before, they don't make a lot of money. And, and as far as this harassment stuff, I wouldn't put up with that if I was any of them. But, I tip, and I tip generously. I make a good wage, and I don't mind passing that on to the people who take care of me when I go into a restaurant. I even like at Casey's or Pizza Hut or places like that, I get a pizza, I tip the people who make the pizza. I mean, I know they're getting paid, but, they took the time to do it, and I'm all for tips.
So, Edward, it sounds like you're not one of those people who is sort of getting frustrated at increasing numbers of businesses asking for tips. No.
No, I'm not. I think it's something that everybody should do, but I've been in situations where, you look at the guy next to you or the people next to you and the table next to you, and they get excellent service and everything, and they leave, and and they're making good money because they're driving Lexus and stuff like that. And, I'm going to keep that money. And, what the heck? They're making $2 an hour.
All right, Edward, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate you sharing your perspective with us. And, Lawrence, I want to bring you back into the conversation now. We heard from another listener, and we've heard talk of these studies about the idea of a tipping war, right, where we see tipping rates going up and up. And for everyone like Edward out there who's happy to tip for even picking up a takeout pizza, you know, we do hear about from people like Charles in Champaign who said, while I do not mind tipping, I think it's bad manners to hand someone a tablet for a coffee. He's talking about, you know, those computer tablets some businesses use as cash registers. He says, tablets now have program rates from 22 to 35%, which is way out of line. Cost of eating out has gone through the roof. You add it to a high percentage tip, which is levied on the meals and taxes. Fewer people are eating out or go to fast food places. This is bound to hurt sit-down restaurants. We need to restore balance. What's wrong with a 15% tip? Seems reasonable. Lawrence, when you see that, what effect does that have on the businesses themselves?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Going back to the tipping wars, with new business models coming up, for instance, like DoorDash, that, you know, has delivery workers that that are tipped. What is interesting is that often what DoorDash has done recently is has changed the timing of tipping from after the service to before the service. And then it is possible if you tip before the service that you're going to more likely get your delivery faster. So businesses sometimes are confounding a tip, which is an expression of gratitude after the service has been delivered, an appreciation of the courtesy, to tipping before the service, which implies that if you tip more, you're going to get more likely to get your food delivered earlier. So this is like using the tip also to pay for faster service, and you know that kind of compounds the tipping, leading to what in some of my research I call a tipping war. So usually tips are after the service. Tipping before just makes it even worse. So that's about a tipping war. Then coming back to tipping in general, tipping at the self-checkout, to me this also seemed to be somewhat ridiculous. Some studies, all studies conducted before the pandemic are a bit dated now, but you know, some studies compare the tipping prevalency in different occupation, and these occupations can have a different contact between the service provider and the customer. So it turns out that tipping is more prevalent for professions where there is a closer contact between the service provider and the customers. So certainly like in restaurants and the waiters, you know, that's obviously the case. And what is more interesting is that that close contact is not necessary for customers to decide on the quality and pay then a higher tip if the quality is high and a lower tip if the quality is low. Very often tips do not depend that much on quality, less than you would expect. But the reason why that professions with closer contact between customers and workers are tipped more often is that it allows the customers to express more gratitude. So the human-to-human contact, as we just heard with the previous caller, is very important. Therefore, I do think that, you know, tipping at the self-checkout, you know, that is going to be rebuked by the customers on the long run.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into some of these other businesses we've been hearing about. And this is a point that was raised by Wendy in Shabana, who said considers herself a good tipper when she's provided with service. For example, when I go to a nail salon or hairdresser, I give a substantial tip, $20 to $100. She said her newspaper lady gets that much too. Wait staff are worthy of generosity. But if she's buying something and the person was just checking me out, she says, I don't feel I need to add a tip. I'm more likely to give them one if it's a small business rather than a large company. And, you know, she also just notes that she knows people who have worked in restaurants who make very good tips. She was had a fellow teacher who made more money on the weekends bartending than she probably did during the week teaching. You know, Rachel, there's a lot to unpack there, but let's talk about more about businesses and why they're doing this. You had an article in the Wall Street Journal mentioning plant stores, baby formula retailers that were asking for tips. What is going on there?
Yeah, they are increasingly popping up when checking out online, which people are really floored by. But the American economy has become more tip dependent since the pandemic, where businesses are factoring tips into their income by effectively paying workers less because they know that tips will make up part of their salaries. And so they're putting the onus for worker pay onto consumers, which consumers are obviously responding to quite forcefully. So it's not just something that's popping up willy-nilly. It's not as if they're conspiring to all add tips. It's that they're noticing, if the flower shop next door did it, then why shouldn't they? If it's an easy way to make a little bit more money without perhaps having to raise prices, it's a little bit complicated. Consumers say they would rather pay more, but then to be asked for tips, but they may say that and do something different. So I think that business owners are more aware of it, but there isn't a huge incentive for them to change because consumers might be complaining about it. They might say that they're annoyed by it, but for the most part, tip requests aren't driving them away, or at least as far as they know. And they do think that raising prices would mean, not coming back for another plan.
Sarah, how do we know if, and maybe the question answer is we don't, but how do you know when you are asked to give a tip that it's really going to go to the workers, especially if it's on an electronic display terminal and not go to the local business owner or maybe even some, out of town private equity firm that's bought up whatever restaurant chain you're visiting?
That's right. You don't know. And unfortunately, the US Department of Labor, and honestly, every state Department of Labor I've spoken to, and that's about 26 states, has always said the restaurant industry has the highest rates of what we call wage theft and tip theft of any industry in the United States. That's wage theft is basically not paying somebody for all the hours they work. And tip theft is, of course, taking a portion of the tips. And that happens in a lot of different ways. As the federal law and state law requires employers to ensure tips bring workers from that sub-minimum wage to the full minimum wage with tips on top. But the US Department of Labor under Obama reported an 84% violation rate with regard to employers actually complying with those rules and ensuring that tips brought workers to the full minimum wage. Look, right now, consumers are definitely responding to the spread of tipping, which is happening, as Rachel said, because in part employers want what restaurants have, that ability to pay a sub-minimum wage. We have seen a number of coffee shops and retail businesses, even one airline, attempt to reduce their workers' wages from a full minimum wage to a sub-minimum wage because they've introduced tipping on an iPad or some kind of some format they've introduced tipping. And the outrage we're feeling is, of course, why should I do this? Why can't you just pay your workers more? But we have to remember that same concept is happening every time we eat in a restaurant. Every time we eat in a restaurant and we tip, that tip is being used by the employer to count against the worker's wage. That is the theory of the law, that every time you tip, it can allow the employer to pay the worker less. And so what we really need is a full minimum wage for everybody. I mean, the word minimum, if you look it up in the dictionary, it is the least you should be paid by your employer. Minimum wage. Everybody should get that minimum wage, and the tips should be on top of the wage as they were from the inception of tipping in feudal times. That is the only way to stop this spread of tipping across so many businesses, the spread of more and more employers wanting to use the tips to cut against wages. And frankly, this notion of tip theft. I do want to say one more thing about tip theft. Most restaurants ch cut out of the workers' tips credit card processing fees. So when you every time you tip on a credit card, the employer will di basically deduct from the workers' tips their credit card, what it takes them to process that tip on a credit card. So there's illegal tip theft where you don't know if the employer's taking a cut or using it as they're supposed to be using it. And then there's also legal, cutting of the tips that comes from theft. things like credit card processing fees.
Well, that explains a good friend of mine who once worked as a server at a Cracker Barrel would only leave cash tips, never uses the credit card thing to leave a tip on the table.
Right.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation when we return. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the past, present, and future of tipping in America, as many of us experience what's been called tipflation or tip fatigue. There are also people who are imagining a future where tipping isn't the necessity it so often feels like now. We're talking about that, too. Lawrence Debo is professor of operations management at Dartmouth College. He's one of our guests today. He studied the reasons we tip and the effect that has on businesses. Also with us is Rachel Wolf, who reports on consumer trends for the Wall Street Journal, and Saru Jayaraman, president of the advocacy group One Fair Wage and director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And let's go now to DJ calling from Sycamore, Illinois on line four. DJ, I understand one of your first jobs was in food service.
Absolutely. When I was in my teens, my earlier teens, my first real job was being a waiter, a busboy, and a short order cook at times. Every summer to earn some extra money. I worked hard at it. When I was younger, I was told often by my grandmother how my grandfather had worked. When she met him, he was working at one of the big resorts in the Catskills, and he worked harder than anyone else there to get the top waiter job and earned enough money to put himself through dental school. When I go to a restaurant or other places where tipping is customary, I was taught when I was much younger that the word tip stood for to ensure promptness. If the wait staff is serving me, I understand if it's a very busy night and the attention may be a little off of just me, but if they're working hard and they're paying attention and doing their job, I will tip them as generously as I can afford to. If somebody is just standing around and can't be bothered, then I will adjust the tip accordingly. But these people are not doing this for the glory of the job to be a waiter or a waitress. They're not doing it for the title of head waitstaff. They're doing it because they need the job and they're working hard and they're learning about work in many cases and about working for a living. Absolutely, they deserve tips whenever they can deserve them and whenever they earn them.
What do you think, DJ? Do you think that the, if people didn't have the sort of tipping as incentive idea that you're expressing for, you know, for prompt service, if that didn't exist, if people just were just all paid the same wage and the restaurant said, no tipping here, we don't allow it, do you think service would be affected?
It might, but I find that most of the people who are working in those jobs are trying their best. I suspect that it never hurts to have an incentive like a little extra something. I know it never did for me or anyone else that I know. It's telling them thank you in one more way than just verbally.
Yeah. All right, DJ, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Lawrence, let's come now. We're coming to the end of our time together, about 10 minutes left in our program today. Let's talk about some of the ways that people are, you know, trying to conceive of having a world without tips. And another way, we don't have to look that far, pretty much many other places, if not everywhere else in the world, really doesn't do a lot of tipping. We heard a voicemail this morning from Warren in Champaign talking about this very point.
I lived in Japan, where there's no tipping ever for anything. And the fact that people don't expect a tip does not mean that they don't do a good job. They do a good job because they take pride in their work. I think most people do a good job because they take pride in their work.
All right. Thank you for that. Warren expressing a similar sentiment we heard from DJ, the caller there. Lawrence, tipping is not exclusively American, but it's prevalent here. How do you see other countries, though, handling worker wages in a way that's different than the way we do in America?
Yeah, well, thank you. I was born in Belgium, and spend the first 30 years of my life in Europe, where there is no tipping norm. And big was my surprise indeed when I first came to the US and I was expected to leave a tip. Of course, I didn't know at that point in time, you know, what the conditions are that, you know, that Saru explained of wage stuff in the United States. So in Europe, the workers are paid a livable wage, and you would tip just to genuinely express your gratitude by leaving some coins, some change. But that was completely independent of, you know, thinking about the worker. It was completely independent of feeling I need to contribute now because these people are paid a sub-minimum wage. So that kind of indicates that one society can perfectly live without tipping, and I was fed very well and had very nice dining experiences in Europe. In the US, it's very different, and that's a bit what is interesting, I think, certainly from a research perspective on a norm. A norm kind of sustains itself. Why do we tip? Well, we tip because we tip, and so it is like it's very hard. It's like the chicken and the egg problem. It's very hard to disentangle this, and many restaurants have tried to abolish tipping. Many of them reverting back to tipping because customer wants it. You know, we have heard many voices expressing, "I want to tip because I feel for the worker." Now, what this means is that perhaps only government intervention can change something to the evolution of norms. And I think, as Sarvi was mentioning, the reducing the sub-minimum wage or eliminating the sub-minimum wage is going to make tipping more expensive for, you know, for the businesses, as there's going to be some surplus that, you know, customers are willing to pay that the restaurants cannot or the business owners cannot appropriate. And so I think that change, probably, if it will come, will not come from one restaurant or from a chain, but more through government intervention, trying to put the whole industry at the same level.
Well, Saru, I want to share one last voicemail from a listener. We heard a little bit of this at the beginning of the show, Waylon in Champaign, talking about why he never tips.
It's an evil system. It should not have happened. It should not be. We should not use it at all. And the only thing I can do to stop it is to just not tip myself. Most people are okay with that. And I tell them when they've done a good job. I tell them when they've not done a good job and how they could do a better job.
All right, Sarah, what do you think of that approach? What can the individual, aside from call your city council member, call your state legislator, call your congressperson, what can the individual do to try and fight this system if they don't like it?
Yeah, first I want to clarify that our work and our campaign and what's moving with a lot of momentum around the country is not to get rid of tipping or to replace tipping with a minimum wage. No, it's to actually get what seven states already have, which is a full minimum wage with tips on top, which is actually the way it worked from the beginning of, you know, tipping in feudal Europe, a full minimum wage from your employer and let tips be on top of that. You know, if we want as customers to see a world in which employers do pay their workers and our tips are what most of us intend them to be, which is an extra or bonus for a job well done, the best thing to do is to tell the manager or owner or employer at the end of your meal, ask to speak to the manager, employer, owner at the end of your meal. Hey, I love the food here. I love the service. I want to keep coming back, but I want you to know, as a conscientious consumer, it's important to me that you pay your employees a full minimum wage like every other business, and let my tip be on top of that wage, not instead of that wage. And I totally understand people have different perspectives, as the caller we just heard from, but it's precisely for the reason that people have different perspectives. Some tip, some don't tip, some tip well, some don't, you know, and tipping goes up and down week to week, month to month, shift to shift, blizzards, hurricanes, climate change, all of that affects workers' income. And that is why these workers deserve a minimum wage like every other employee, so that they can count on some stable income. And the tips are what we've always intended them to be, which is, you know, if it's for a job well done, let it be that, and not the entirety of a woman's ability to feed her children.
Rachel, in your reporting for the Wall Street Journal, what are you hearing are some of the ways that people are resisting tipflation or trying to overcome tip fatigue without also necessarily feeling like a heel to the person who is staring you down as you are making your final payment decisions?
Well, people are tipping less, which, as Saru said, is part of the problem. The answer isn't just to say, you know, I'm going to push back by not respecting workers' work. And, you know, it's sort of a catch-22 where if people tip less, that does translate into lower worker pay until we have a system where that minimum wage is guaranteed without tips. So, you know, I don't know that people are really resisting their tip fatigue so much. People are tipping less, and there's data that tips, especially in non-service industry, so non-restaurant industry tips, are down about 10% year over year, according to a payroll provider. So we're really seeing consumers grow tired of tipping and tip less. And that is concerning, especially, you know, with the holiday season and so many workers depending on those tips in order to buy presents for their families and, as Saru said, just keep food on the table.
Saru, I wonder if it's not too personal, like, where do you draw the line at tipping if you do or maybe you don't, right? Like, I've gotten requests from the person who delivers my newspaper, and I usually do tip them. Yes, I'm one of the dinosaurs who still gets a paper newspaper every day. But the person who picks up the garbage every week, I mean, this is, you know, more of a holiday thing here in America. But I wonder, how do you strike that balance personally?
Well, I try to tip 20% everywhere that I know workers are earning a sub-minimum wage, because I know how they rely on that. And by the way, that's not just restaurants. As I said, anywhere where an employee earns $30 to $40 a month in tips per month, they can be paid a sub-minimum wage. So anywhere a worker is paid a sub-minimum wage, you know, I always tip 20%. But I always communicate at the end, I really would like to see your business pay a full minimum wage. And I will say I would draw the line. I have been asked in a small flower shop where it's the owner standing behind the iPad, and she turns it around and it asks for a tip, and it's the owner of the establishment, you know, who got the flowers for me. I didn't tip in that case because I'm paying the owner the cost of the flowers and the labor and everything through the price. And I don't feel that I should be paying the owner a tip on top of that. So that's where I've drawn the line. It is getting kind of out of hand. And until we require everybody to pay a full minimum wage with tips on top, we're going to see this keep happening everywhere.
I think a great place to end our conversation. Saru Jayaraman, Rachel Wolf, and Lawrence Debo, thank you all so much for being with us today on The 21st Show.
Thank you.
Sara Jayaraman is president of One Fair Wage and director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. Rachel Wolf reports on consumer trends for the Wall Street Journal. And Lawrence Debo is professor of operations management at Dartmouth College. And he has studied the reasons we tip and the effect that has on businesses. Thank you to everyone who called in and sent voicemails and replied to our texting group. We really do love hearing from you, and including your comments on the show. If you want to join our texting group, after all, you do put the public in public radio, you can do so by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. Again, the word is TALK to 217-803-0730. Beyond that, we love hearing from you about our programs, your suggestions for future guests. If you see a story happening in your area or just something interesting happening in your area that you don't think is getting attention from journalists, let us know about it. Talk@21stshow.org is our email address, and you can just find that or every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. We've got our past programs there, and you can find links to subscribes to our podcast, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.